security has never been more complex. Cyber, physical, compliance, resilience. Different perspectives, real-world experience. One conversation. Welcome to the wild ride through security. So, hi, we're here at the InCyber Forum in beautiful Lille, and with me today is Raina Stamboliska. Very welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Raina is just going through your LinkedIn profile to get all this done, sorted out correctly.
You should.
So I should. Absolutely. It's so much interesting. You should actually look her up. That's really, really, there's much to see and much to much to learn here. So you are, at the moment, you're practitioner in residence at the Centre Internet et Société du CNRS. You're a digital European Union ambassador, and the last one is rapporteur. Did I pronounce correctly?
Yes.
I think so. And expert ad hoc on foresight on emerging and future cybersecurity challenges. That's the introduction for my part, but maybe you want to dig in a little deeper and help me out here.
Yeah, and so the way I earn a living is perhaps the least interesting part, but still, yeah. It's that I'm the CEO and founder of our strategy, where we do a lot of consultancy on complicated yet very fun, yet complicated things, such as compliance, the CRA, NIS2, what else? You know, the fun stuff.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely reasonable that you kind of monetize the knowledge that you gained over all those years working those commissions and being so close to where legislation actually happened.
Yeah, so it's that's where the thing gets really interesting, is that when you have a foot on the ground and like in operations, and you have a foot in where the policy is done and how it's written and what trade-offs need to be adopted in a way or done, that's where the fun stuff happens. And it's always a very interesting experience because, I mean, you're German, happens to good people, don't get me wrong. I'm Bulgarian and French. So even, you know, only among, like between the two of us, there are already three countries. That's three EU member states. And by the way, NATO also members. So even only those three countries, if you look at them, they have very different maturity levels, very different approaches, you know, to what risk is, to what cybersecurity is, to the types of organizations that are most important to them in terms of prosperity, in terms of development, and so on. So you get to discover very different operational realities and then kind of translate this into policy, you know, already to try and make, meet everyone somewhere in the middle. Because you guys from Germany, you don't have the same approach to cybersecurity as people in France do, and the other way around, which is fine. I mean, that's where fun things happen, because you need, again, to have all that diversity taken into account. But yeah, this is that's where I like to be also, because that's also very pluridisciplinary. And this is important to also explain the realities of our day-to-day lives, you know, in operations, to people who do policy.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've also lived in Germany, right? You lived in Munich.
Yes, I have. Yes, I did my PhD in Munich. Although my Hochdeutsch is absolutely, let's not go there, and my Bavarian is even worse. So let's stick to English for everyone's mental sanity. Mine included.
Yeah.
What's left of it?
What you just mentioned is actually that there is a common denominator. So we all Europeans want cybersecurity to some extent to be transferable, to be connectable to for each member state. We not want to have a minimum cybersecurity maturity all over the member states. But still, it comes to some complexity when you look at each member state's perspective on that. When you're looking at Germany, as you know, we have federal states, so it's even more complicated because, it's, you know, I've just spoken to some guys from Belgium and to Estonia.
Yes,
and they move things so fast, and it was really, really I really admire that. But on the other hand, I know that a country like Germany, which has a couple of more citizens and more complex legislation and so on, it takes just a little longer. How's your take on that?
Yeah, so it's that's part of the whole, you know, making things together, you know, building Europe together, right? And it's like when you work with clients, big clients have problems for big organizations, small clients have problems for small organizations, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not better or worse, more challenging or less challenging, they're just different, right? Mm-hmm. So in a country like Estonia or Bulgaria, those are small countries. The economic makeup is different. The geopolitical and political makeup and position are also very different. You're not going to look at external irritants, so to speak, the same way when you are in Estonia, in Poland, or in Bulgaria, as you would look at them when you're in Germany or in France, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, those differences matter. And then again, I mean, you are a big federal country. France is a big centralized country, right? So, again, they both come with their own fair share of complicated, infuriating things and with their fair share of stuff that works well,
mm-hmm.
right? For example, for you, it would be way easier to do things at the SMB level, at the land level,
yeah.
Then it would be for France, which is very centralized, to do stuff for SMBs at the regional level. Mm. We call them regions, right? Not Länder, but so that's also a difference. And then, of course, I mean, Belgium, I love them.
Yeah, you too.
They're tiny compared to Germany, even though they have a different, say, federal makeup,
mm-hmm.
But they're very small compared to Germany. They have two languages, which is another level of complex, you know.
Mm.
So everyone comes with this, and that's where and that's where, you know, building transverse realities like what we try to do in cybersecurity, this gets very very slow, very challenging. Also because not every member state, if we only talk about the EU, positions cybersecurity at the same executive level, mm-hmm. if you like. For example, you now have for the first time in Germany a federal minister of digital.
Yeah, that's,
right?
That's a good thing.
That's
We're all very happy about that.
We are too. I mean, mm-hmm. it's you need something to harmonize, not to unify, mm-hmm. but to harmonize things, mm-hmm. right?
That's
although, and this is important. Although at the land, you know, at the land level, things work very well already. So you have different challenge about how to consolidate and how to coordinate.
Yeah.
At the federal level, especially when you have all the additional, like, what was the name of this directorship, you know, that needs to report to the chancellor. And you have a makeup, like an institutional makeup, that is very different from France, where, for example, the French cybersecurity authority is directly under the purview of the prime minister.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah, it's a very different setup.
It's a very different setup for you. The BSI existed long before you had a ministry.
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
We have a ministry that's under, like, digital ministry, which is a delegated ministry, which is under a different minister, not under the prime minister. Right.
Mm.
And in other countries, it would be cyber would be looked with the digital stuff under tourism and communication,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, whatever. So all those institutional pasts and presents, mm. they also draw up to a different institutional future. And when you need to kind of combine them all together, yeah, it gets really tricky.
It gets, absolutely. But still pressure is on, right? So looking
yes.
at geopolitics, which is one of yes. the major themes here at the In Cyber Forum this year, besides AI. But obviously it's data sovereignty. So which brings us to the hot topic of US-European Union partnership. I must admit, I'm a completely transatlantic fan. I've grown up, as we both have, in a time where we were very much looking over to the States and was like the American dream thing. I had my small American dream in the village I've grown up in southern Germany. I never decided and I never wanted to move there, but still, there was some ideology to it, and this is gone now. And the question is, where does this bring us? So when it comes to data sovereignty, do we really believe that we want to be completely sovereign?
So let me slice it up. So, well, first and foremost, I mean, I grew up in a big city in Bulgaria where the very first American university in the Balkans was established. So I can relate in part to this, let's say, very early intrusion, well, arrival of the U.S. in our part of the world.
Yeah.
Right? Because there still was, there was a post-Soviet, so to speak, moment in time to it. And we were NATO members. Bulgaria was a NATO member before it became an EU member state, right? And then, yeah, I mean, a lot of different things, but we've always seen, and in this, in France, this is, there is a very different perception to the US, which is not so friendly. And it's not been that friendly to start with.
Okay.
Very different from, let's say, more traditional transatlantic views as you could find in Germany, in Central and Eastern Europe, or even in the whole in the Netherlands, right? Very different. France is more of a cultural exception.
Okay.
But still, you know, so there are different things. It's, one is our personal perception, which is what it is. The other one is the different, is something more, let's say, factual, which is how international order used to work. And I'm saying used to because it's not working that way anymore. And it's become extremely visible since Agent Orange, or as they call him, Donald Trump, took his second office, like slightly more than a year ago. And so, because so far what we used to have is an international order based on international law.
Yeah.
Right. We would have states work in good faith, and they would work towards something that respects internal rules, but still makes us meet somehow halfway on specific things. Right. So that's how we used to do things until now. It's not this anymore. Also because, well, the Trump administration withdrew the United States participation in a lot of those international bodies, which, I mean, we knew it would happen, and it actually did happen. But also, so that's something I think is not spoken enough about, which is the EU-US trade deal.
Yeah,
which just got voted in Parliament, and now it's going under trilogues at the EU level, which is, so this is the so-called Turnberry Agreement from last year, you know, the golf thing, which is a very weird beast in terms of, like, more in its makeup, but it's extremely telling about what is happening to the transatlantic relationship. And what is happening to the transatlantic relationship is that it's not going well, that we are being bullied and strong-armed by our U.S. counterparts. Not friends, not partners.
Not partners anymore.
No, because, so it's not a trade deal as you see a trade deal under the WTO purview. Right? It's a tariff deal. And into it, you have things that are as far from digital policy as dairy, steel, and aluminium. Right? Like, you couldn't make it more far, like further from digital policy. And where things get a little complicated is that you have that sort of inclusions into this framework about cybersecurity standards, which are very submarine way, if you like, towards imposing specific technologies through standards on specific public, right? And then what you have, I mean, so far so good, if we want to be like really okay. I mean, it's a negotiation. So where things get even worse is throughout the negotiation, which has been going on since November 2025, is that the American negotiators have systematically brought EU digital policy, especially the Digital Services Act and the Digital Markets Act, as a bargaining chip to this whole tariff situation. Basically saying, please simplify, remove it, if, you know, remove all those things like the DSA that we consider to be taxes on our big techs. Just remove them, and then we'll give you preferential tariffs. And then, you know, and every time that situation comes around, which is every month or so, because negotiations are ongoing, we get into this whole nightmare of threatening to invade Greenland and, you know, all that sort of things. And it all kind of comes together into a big, hodgepodge of diplomatic violence, of inconsistencies. Because when you work with someone, you want to know that the person is reliable.
Absolutely. That's
and
the basis
previsible,
of trust,
right? If when our American counterparts are unhappy or their president decides overnight to invade Greenland, how reliable is this? So you can sign up on things as much as you like. And so that's what's been dragging also work in Parliament for the past months, is that little by little, the European Parliament added in sunset clause, sunrise clause, like they call them, which are different things that for us Europeans are important. If our US counterpart was unreliable after the deal is signed and ratified, then we would take different measures from our European side to kind of counterbalance this and to not be vassalized, at least on paper. So, which is, and it's a very difficult conversation. And now, and what comes up, if you like, what surfaces now is that this brutality that people see now in diplomatic negotiations with the US counterparts is something that's always been there. Was just way less visible. Now it's just there. It's visible, and nobody is.
It's blunt.
Yeah, it's very blunt. It's very, but it's always been there.
In those negotiations, has there been a weight on the European side, like saying, okay, well, you got these big tech companies in Europe. Let's just tax them. I know this discussion has been going on for a couple of years, but has this been brought into the discussion as well?
Yes, and it's explicitly excluded. So digital taxation is explicitly excluded from the whole deal situation for many reasons. But it's a real question. I mean, because and this kind of loops back to your question about data sovereignty, or more broadly about strategic autonomy and the part of that digital plays into it. Right. And so where you have clear dependency lines, if you like, where, you know, 80% of cloud provisioned in Europe, it's American cloud.
Right.
So there are very many different things into it and different avenues through which you could come to that always same core question, which is, how do we build something that is more resilient for us Europeans in a geopolitical context where pressure is from different sides and expresses in different ways. And when you kind of funnel this to companies, is how do we make sure that our, you know, champions or SMBs, because 99% of companies in Europe are SMBs, right? So how do we make sure that those continue to function, to pay salaries, to provide services? And that's a real question, right? So then and that's where another interesting, if you like, epistemological difference between France and Germany exists, is that in France, we'll talk in terms of doctrine, we'll talk about, you know, we'll put a lot of words on things. And you guys in Germany, you just get up, you start a meeting at 7:30 and you're like, we'll do things and then we'll put words on it. Does it make sense to you, right?
Somehow I know that. I'm a practical person myself. So I really want to start things and build things and then let's put a name on it. I can relate to that. When it comes to, I know you're in tech, very much in tech involved, and when it comes to new technologies. What's your take on, you know, when we say sovereignty, do you see the capabilities of, because that's the idea we're here in cyber and at ITSA and in Germany as well, where everybody's talking about, you know, Germany at the moment, actually the BSI has, and the German Economic Council of the CDU, of the leading party at the moment, they called out a cyber nation Germany vision. And in France, you have something similar. So each and every member state kind of tries to, let's go. This is, There's money to be earned here for our industries. Let's go for that. And I like the idea to build European services to, let's say, replace some of the US ones, particularly for critical infrastructure, because we want to have sovereignty here, of course. But still, what's happening is that as soon as a startup reaches a certain size, it's going to be just acquired by a US company. So how can we reach sovereignty following this path?
Right. So you have different challenges here. I mean, someone will tell you, oh, public procurement. You're like, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it plays a part, but it won't solve everything, right? Yeah. Then you need incentives for those companies also to build. And we also need different stories of success, which I think is very important, because if you go out, because we're, you know, at this trade show, if you go out and you ask the startups or scale-ups what success looks like to them, a lot of them, they will tell you, oh, I want, you know, to reach like a critical mass at some point and then be acquired by a bigger company.
Here we are.
And you're like, why? And they're like, because that's how I can make an exit if I'm the founder, you know, something like that. So exactly. We also need to redefine those things. And there is a lot of like mythology around Silicon Valley, what it is, what it is not, which is something that is still very prevalent, is that if it's not something that looks like, from the stereotype we have about the Silicon Valley, then it's bad or unsuccessful. Mm-hmm. That's not true. So, you know, And then more specifically, so you need we need to make sure that all those EU member states can actually do business with each other. Mm-hmm. And this in cyber has different, I mean, it has different difficulties, right? In EU in Germany, my German is bad. So if I wanted to go and provide cybersecurity services to SMBs in Germany where nobody speaks English, I wouldn't be able to do that, right? You'd be better suited only because you'd speak German, which is fine. I mean, that's how things work. Or if you wanted to provide services to like the National Cybersecurity Authority and it's in Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, they would prefer a local provider than you and I, even, you know, whatever. So you have things that are very different, even only for that. We are in a union that was created, we weren't even planned for, but that was created as a peace building effort, right?
Absolutely, it's a good thing.
And if you think about it, Like when it was created, nobody would have imagined that we would be in this room sitting without, you know, shooting at each other or, yeah. or hitting each other or shouting at each other. But that's where we are. But it was not necessarily done as a vehicle to something more pragmatic, more agile, more businessy. Mm-hmm. And than we need now. And if you add to this, again, this very different perception of where cyber sits, then you get a very different approach to procurement, to incentives, and so on and so forth, right? I mean, it's not the same as if you're under the purview of the prime minister and if you're under a different, you know, specific purview at the federal level, at the local level, whatever. So when you get those things together, it gets complicated. And then again, we are 27 EU member state countries and there are 24 official languages.
And in the end, it's the economy.
And at the end, it's the economy that is what it is in a way. Mm-hmm. And SMBs from Europe cannot necessarily buffer as many, selling, providing things at a loss, which is a very big advantage of, you know, American bigger companies. And that's also why we need to defend the Digital Markets Act, because that's what it actually tries to achieve. It tries to say, look, there are people who can make oligopolies or even monopolies on certain things, and they can do that because they can sell at a loss for years.
They can.
Right?
And then they can raise prices.
And then they can raise prices. They can acquire or acquire smaller companies to just kill them or to absorb them or whatever. Then, you know, little by little, you're captive. So they raise prices and so on and so forth. So you have all those dynamics there that come together as well. And then now what is interesting, and I would encourage, you know, your audience to follow this closely, is the so-called 28th regime, which is... there are 27 member state countries. Mm-hmm. So how about we created a 28th regime, which would be a European framework for creating companies, which is easier because you don't need to, like, you don't need, you need to, but it will be a different approach to how we deal with, I don't know, labor law or whatever between France, Germany, and Bulgaria, for
example. It's about financing as well. So setting up a company should be fast.
And so, how you set them up for how, you know, there is electronic invoicing that's coming up in like a few months, mandatory for everyone, which will be a very big change for your plumber, for, you know, for so many people. There is the EU ID wallet, the professional one, not for individuals, but for companies, again. Yeah. And there is this savings union and so on, which thinks about vehicles, about how to mobilize investments, people's savings in a way, but in a secure way, because you can't play up with people's savings. I mean, you could, but not great. And so how can we mobilize those to basically stop them from laying dormant in bank accounts and basically inject them in a safe way into innovative companies that need, you know, money to
funding.
To build and to grow. And that is not money from explicitly coming from VCs or from private equity or from, you know, other third countries and so on and so forth. Because those logics, the private equity or the VC, those are very specific logics. They are not at all a common interest, if you like, logic.
They're not
completely. So, and then you have the hedge funds, and then you have other things that are yet another beast.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like the Gulf hedge funds, they're not the same as VCs. They're not the same as private equity. They're a different beast entirely. So we need, again, to make a European way for things that work for us within the different, like the rules and the limits and the values that we have. Which is a very different, again, approach to our American or Asian counterparts.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we could talk on for hours.
Yes.
I must say, I really enjoyed this talk.
Likewise.
And I would love to have a second one.
Anytime.
I know you live in Paris.
Yes.
I love being in Paris. So Maybe we'll like set something up. Invitation. And, yeah, I'm just being a bit a little pushy here, but we will see how that works and go a little deeper into that. Yep. So thank you very much for being here. Of course, you are. This is the one of the most relevant places and let's say exhibitions, conferences in Europe when it comes to cybersecurity, the InCyber Forum, and we'll see each other along the next days.
Yes.
And hopefully this evening on the gala.
Likewise, thank you for having me.
See you soon in Paris then. Bye bye.